Well, to switch continents and talk about seasonal forecasts for the Midwest and how that's going to be important to help understand the impact of variable weather as we go forward. All of this, and I've spent a lot of time in the last 10 or 15 years working with producers about this, and these are two of their attitudes about seasonal forecast. And it's a little bit of what Peter said. One of them told me if I knew what the weather was going to be for the growing season, I'd know exactly how to farm. I told him if I knew exactly what the weather was going to be, he couldn't afford to talk to me. But and then the other piece of this puzzle is if you're going to predict the weather, you better be more accurate than that weather person on TV. So I already have all this information about there. So if you're going to have a seasonal forecast, you better be better than what we already have out there and targeted. And Peter made a good point of how do we really look at these parameters from that standpoint. And so when we look at this, and we look at the seasonal forecast, and we've been looking at how this information rolls in to help producers make decisions, there's really multiple aspects of this. And it's really the pre-growing season and planning, and we'll talk about that, the within-season management decisions, the harvest operations, and then even post-harvest operations. We're beginning to see that there are other entities that would like a forecast. It's not so much about that crop in the field, it's what really happens after that. And then, as we begin to see, there's an emerging effort in terms of what's the agronomic versus the environmental impacts. When we start looking at this, there are whole groups of now beginning to say, what's the environmental impact of agriculture? How can we predict that? How do we look at this from a different standpoint? Case in point, Lake Erie with the outbreak of in Toledo in terms of water, saying, you know, what's the probability of that type of occurrence occurring again? Who do we blame for that? That's really what it comes down to. This is a rather large and complex diagram, but it does point out, and I'll credit Gene Talkley for putting this together. It's an impact and a result of the CornCap project that's been conducted across that. But it's very instructive to start looking at this type of system to show the complexity of where we need information and the complexity of linking seasonal forecast, climate forecast, a whole range of things coming together. So if we just start in January and you go all the way around to December, in February, I mean, they're purchasing seed and they really would like to know what the soil temperature and soil moisture are in that, because the potential impact is in terms of compacted soils. March started getting into this because they're buying insurance. What would they do in that standpoint? Frost damage, late planting, changing planting season. In May, you really just keep going around in terms of wet soils, extreme heat, all the way around this. And so as we begin to construct crop calendars, this really becomes a framework of how do we begin to utilize information about seasonal forecast into a framework, but it really gets it down to the point of the decisions that the producer is making at all these different places. And in dissecting it from that standpoint puts it into an entirely different viewpoint in terms of how the producers not only have an engagement into that, but also their need for information from the same standpoint. So we're doing this across the Midwest as part of the Climate Hub and developing crop calendars for all of the different commodities. Corn, soybeans, more fascinating are some of the vegetable crops and the specialty crops, which have an entirely different dynamic going on than do cereal or grains. But there, as we look also at this standpoint, the real question is what's changing in our weather? Why do we really need seasonal forecast? Peter did a good job of explaining all the variations that are going on. And if you think about the United States and the upper Midwest in particular, is that we're seeing shifting seasonality in precipitation. We're seeing increased intensity in precipitation. increased variability in temperature with more extreme events, increasing humidity across the Midwest, and I'll just show you the types of changes that are occurring. This is what we project to occur into 2070, 2080. Much higher rainfall during the winter, or much more precipitation during the winter. Much higher rainfall during the spring. Reduced summer rainfall across the United States. And then an increase in fall precipitation. And if you think about this from the standpoint of how we forecast weather, is that if we're seeing a shifting seasonality of precipitation to more spring precipitation and late summer precipitation, as we build our whole cropping systems across the Midwest on summer rainfall. And so if they're going to become more variable or less reliable, what's the forecast in terms of seasonality, in terms of changing cropping maturity, changing cropping diversity, a number of different things that go with that. If you narrow it down and you look at this, and we've already begun to see and even multi-model this changing summer precipitation across the United States, reduced summer precipitation, particularly in the Great Plains, even in the southern part of Iowa, 10, 20, 15% in either model that's out there, and in 2080 is still a decrease. But here's really what's happening. This is not forecast. This is reality. This is the trends in heavy precipitation, more than 1.25 inches per day. And we've had a continual increase in heavy precipitation by decade, starting in the 1970s. And so producers really become very, very concerned about what does this heavy rainfall mean for them. In terms of their whole operations, they really begin to look at this. And if you look at it from this change in just the whole Midwest or Northeast, this is the change in heavy precipitation in terms of percentages over the last 50 years. Almost a 40% increase in heavy precipitation. Says that when we're in, now, as we think about planting operations and fertilizer or herbicide operations, the likelihood of runoff in fields is greatly increasing. So that becomes a different standpoint. Temperature changes into the summer. If you look at the climate piece, we're projecting, again, increasing temperatures and what those means, and particularly the extreme temperature events. And this really becomes important, not sometimes for crops, but it really gets much more into livestock and how do we manage livestock facilities for that operation. And at the same time, because we've warmed, we've also increased the growing season. We've increased the growing season by almost 9 days across the upper Midwest, 10 days in the Great Plains, and almost 3 weeks in the southwest United States. We have a lot more opportunity to grow plants, but the other part is that the probability of frost has not changed. So the probability of frost occurring has remained the same. So even though we might start warming up and growing sooner, probability of frost damage becomes very important. And we see that over and over again. I'll give you one example of this. This is the 2012 tart cherry crop in Michigan. Was completely wiped out. It was a 96% crop failure because of a late season frost. Warmed up, cherries bloomed, got hit by a frost, and then there was no production on that. Here's the other thing that's changed over the past few years is that we do have an increasing humidity across the Midwest. And if you think about a 12% rise in atmospheric water content in the last 42 years. And so that's a 3-degree Fahrenheit increase in dew point. So heat indices in the upper Midwest have become much more humid. It's much more intolerable at times in the heat indices of 110, 112 degrees, are not an uncommon occurrence in there. And again, it's this shifting pattern, more atmospheric water moving in from the Gulf of Mexico coming in here. But in terms of forecasting, that really becomes an important part of this from the standpoint of what's going on. We look also, and where we've been thinking about bringing all this together, is what do we see in May, June versus July, August, and what's the chances of wet springs, dry summers, wet springs, wet summers, dry springs, wet summers. And we just plotted May, June precipitation versus July, August precipitation. All of that data from 1893 to 2013 are in that data set. What you're seeing is that that circle is the 95th percent percentile around that. But it's very instructive to look at 2012, 13, 10, 14, and 2008 are all outside of that. The recent years that we've been incurring are outside of this normal change that we've had in there. So we're getting weirder in our weather, and that's where prediction is really going to become very important for us from that standpoint. Another piece of why it becomes important and all of this is analysis that's been done to look at suitable field days or workable field days in the April-June timeframe, that eight-week period in which we get a lot of our planning operations done, is that every inch of rainfall is a reduction of 2.6 workable field days. So just a simple forecast of saying, here's what's going to be occurring over the next few weeks in terms of workable field days because of the types of decisions that have to be made at that time. And we're seeing this across all the Midwest. And that's a changing seasonality of precipitation. So we have less time to get things done. We have less opportunity to make some of these management decisions, and producers often end up working in fields that end up causing problems later. Compaction, the other things that have to have other pieces to recover from. And so if we can get them set up to think differently about this. The temperature responses for livestock is this is where the extreme temperature events and humidity come into play. This is the dairy heat stress chart. It's basically a thermal humidity index, percent relative humidity against temperature on the y-axis. If you start getting heat indices, if you got 80% humidity and 100 plus 100 degrees, they're already in severe stress. Basically, wrecks milk production, wrecks egg production, meat production in animals. So short-term forecast of heat events in livestock are extremely important for this, even though they're under confined operations. We see the impact of these extreme events very, very dramatic. In fact, we have major mortality in 2010 because we had some heat indices that were clear in that fatal range for a lot of different plants or animals. So if we think about the seasonal forecast, and this has been the feedback we've been getting from producers, is in terms of these trends of precipitation, is there a shift in seasonal precipitation? What's the impact going to be in terms of changing corn or soybean maturity groups for planting? So if we can get it into that seasonal, do we go in terms of changing the season or the length of the growing season of that crop that we want? The other piece is this temperature extremes. What's the potential for hot weather or hot nights during the growing season? Impact is more on animal production management than on crop management. Unless you can get very, very precise in seasonal forecasts and say, I can match this high temperature occurrence with pollination where we see this, that becomes a problem. The spring precipitation, what's the disruption to planting operations or potential for environmental impact? Because we're seeing more and more soil erosion across the Midwest. We're leading to lots of runoff, lots of potential for herbicide loss in there. There's increasing scrutiny of agriculture in the Midwest in terms of looking at the environmental impact. And so we're going to see more and more decisions made that are going to be saying, are you doing the best thing possible out there? The other one that's really fascinating is as we look across the upper Midwest, we're basically almost 50% subsurface drained, and now we're moving a lot of this into patterned tile so that they're not random across the landscape. They're basically installed every 100 feet across there. And a lot of them have controlled drainage systems with them. So they want to know when to shut that drainage off so that that water remains in the soil profile. And now you think about two different models you got to bring together. You got to bring together a forecast model, and now you got to bring together a drainage model. Because you really don't want to have shutting off that tile drain too soon and then have a 6-inch rain out there, because then you end up flooding the whole profile and you can't drain it fast enough. And so this is all of this, and we've had a lot of different inquiries from producers on how do we really bring that together from a short-term as well as a long-term forecast. Fall precipitation is, when we look at it, is what's the effect of precipitation patterns on harvest operations and potential drying costs. We do dry most of the corn and beans across the Midwest. Producers want to leave those in the field as long as possible and not pay that cost for drying, but at the same time, what's the risk of not being able to get the crop out of the field? So the seasonal forecast from the fall perspective is there. Summer temperature patterns, maturity rates, vegetables, and potential harvest problems. Sequencing maturity and planted vegetables, harvest opportunities, because they're short season. I have a lot of different impacts on that. So we've got them to start putting some parameters on this for us in terms of how do we really look at this. In 1 to 5 day forecast, what they really, in the conditions they want to, or practices they want to look at, cultural operations, haying, manure applications, animal stress. We can give them a good 1 to 5 day forecast on temperature and precipitation. These are the types of decisions that they make in that. If we're 5 to 10, is still in some of the cultural operations, but more about sequencing, planting, spraying, a number of different things that go with that. 30 to 90 day forecast, they'd like to have the same precision in 30 to 90 days as they have in 1 to 5. I tell them that that's not possible, but planning and scheduling operations. They really start looking at this, really gets much more into the specialty crops and all of this in terms of how do they really look at those systems out there. There's some opportunities for this as we really begin to look at it, is that we're really going to have to link agriculture with weather and climate forecasters to build a better linkage with ag needs. Peter gave some really good examples on this. I think there's great opportunities in this, but we're going to have to work to develop that. The other piece of this that we haven't talked about is that the linkages between the pest and disease models to predict the outbreaks of seasonal weather on this aspect. As we look at a lot of cases, high rainfall events just right after emergence, and a lot of the crops across the Midwest end up with bacterial diseases. And bacterial diseases, there's no control measure for. So if they're saying, if you can tell me that delay planting or something else to avoid that problem, that would solve a lot of the issues. But we also need to link weather and climatology together to look at the short and long-term impacts for more effective planning. That's part of the decision tool piece that they're after. There are opportunities, but they also are going to take a lot of effort in terms of being able to realize these pieces of the puzzle. So with that, thank you.